The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier, Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, Richard McCall, here for Columbia Calling, in association with Escape Artists and the Overseas Radio Network. And we're here for the next 45, 50 minutes to talk to you all about things going on in Colombia and, you know, unravel some of the ideas about Colombia, and let's put to bed, put paid to some of these, you know, fantasies about Colombia and so on and so forth. But anyway, later on we'll be talking to Dave Proctor. I'm particularly happy with this show because it's something very different. You know, an Englishman who's been out here for 6 odd years and based in Cali, and he's starting this race, this mountain bike sort of like this extreme race from one side of Colombia to the other called the Legend of El Dorado. So you'll be able to hear more about that on the next section of the show, and all about Dave and his life in Cali. But that's, I mean, it's pretty special. But ha, Semana Santa, it's upon us, finally. You know how I feel? I don't feel that the year has fully started until Semana Santa has passed. Why do I think that? Well, because I've been so, you know, busy, occupied with Monpos for the last 7 years. This is the first year in my Colombian tenure that I'm not in Monpos, because, of course, this time next week, I think, or within 10 days, 8 days, so maybe this time next week I'll be a dad. So we're here in Bogota, waiting for the birth of my son. And so I'm not in Monpos with the austere Semana Santa traditions and marches. I'm neither am I in Popayan. Those are the two top places, I think, of course, for Semana Santa celebrations. Yes, the Casa Maria, my little hotel in Monpos, is full. I think all of Monpos is full. I should imagine that all of Popayan is full. And looking out my window here on this Monday in Bogota seems empty. You know what? I like it this way. It's just a little less traffic about, a little less people bustling on the streets. It just means that I can get things done. It's just a bit easier, isn't it? You know, without so much going on. So anyway, Semana Santa is upon us. And yeah, well, if you're traveling, please be careful. I did see on the news today that the police out there near to Cartagena for the travelers are actually giving the first cup of coffee away. They're out there. So the ordinary roadblocks are not so ordinary at the moment. So as they stop you and check your documents, they're also giving you a cup of coffee to ensure that you don't fall asleep at the wheel. Very social, very innovative, and of course part of this whole drive to make us not feel so, overwhelmed by the police. You know, we don't feel ill at ease when they stop us. So that's about that, really. The other thing that's been popping up of late that I'm quite interested in following, and so there might be people out there who know a bit more about this than me, it's the reality of the emerald trade here in Colombia. Now I'm interested in doing maybe some pieces for the international media about this and getting into some mines and so on, but I did notice that yesterday one of the sort of top emerald guys who was, you know, a real ally of Victor Carranza. That Victor Carranza was the former Emerald Tsar. He died last year, but he was this guy was basically killed in his car somewhere in Boyacá yesterday. And this sort of heralds the the era of a new Emerald War, or as they call it here, the Green War. I think there's a power struggle in this vacuum that's been left by Victor Carranza's death. I think there's a power struggle over these lucrative areas of land, which obviously yield this type of green gold, really. And so I think this is something that we need to, you know, pay attention to in coming weeks, months, and perhaps years, as we see the sort of machinations of how the emerald ownership pans out. So that's all very interesting and very polemic, something to look out for here when we get beyond the, let's say, the headlines of the scandals in the Constitutional Court and the corruption everywhere. But this Emerald War could have some significant play in the press in coming months, I think. So anyway, if you want to get in touch with us, and if you want to recommend anyone who you feel who should be interviewed on Columbia Calling, please get in touch. We're columbiacalling@gmail.com. The website's columbiacallingradio.com. Twitter, @Columbia Calling. We're on Facebook, Columbia Calling. We've got a good following. You know, if you've got anything you think needs to be heard or seen, please, you know, post it on the Facebook site or get in touch with me. I'm pretty accessible and, you know, usually answer my emails. So for those of you traveling, having a good Semana Santa, please be careful out there on the roads and, you know, enjoy this Easter with your loved ones, friends, whomever, or just as an escape from everyone. So, yes, I'll be signing off now for just a minute, and we'll be back with Dave Proctor in Cali and talking about his ventures down there. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Thank you for listening.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall, and we're here in Bogota. And like last week, this week we're speaking to someone down in Cali, a very special guest. As you know, one person speaks to another person, and word gets out about Columbia Calling. And I would like to thank Mary Quinney for recommending Dave Proctor, who's a Briton down there in Cali, to come on the show and talk to us today. So, Dave, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Well, listen, so now you've been in Cali for some years now. What happened? How did you end up there?
Basically, I graduated in 2009 from Leeds University in England, and it wasn't a great time to graduate with the economy like it was back then. So I applied to come to Colombia with the British Council Language Assistance Scheme, which I'd already been on in Chile a few years before. So I basically applied, did all the forms. I hadn't been to Colombia before, but I had lived in South America. And I was placed in Cali. So I came for a year, worked at a university, and I mean, basically left and have come back, left and come back again since then. So I did not envisage being here 6 years ago, but I still am. So.
Six years is a generation now. I mean, you've seen expats come and go.
Exactly, yeah, and you also end up falling into, not the trap, I suppose you could term it like that, but as you see people come and go, you also become sort of maybe more of a figurehead in the community. And, you know, you end up running certain events, football tournaments, pub quizzes, poker tournaments, those sort of things. So yeah, one thing leads to another, and it's all exciting.
That's very cool. Now, how did you find the placement with the British Council? I did one years and years ago, 1998, in Guatemala. How did you find it in Chile and in Colombia? Was there a big difference between the two places?
I think Chile, the scheme was a lot more established in Chile than it was in Colombia. I know it is now a lot more popular. But it's a fantastic program, a great way to travel. They guarantee you a pretty good job. They help, you know, they give you a very reasonable amount to live off as well. And it's very reputable. So it's I'd recommend it to anyone that's interested. It's a good way to travel. The work isn't too strenuous. It's a perfect job, really. If you've just graduated, you want to travel, you want to see a different country, but also work and earn some money. It's a perfect job, really.
Excellent. So it sounds like you've landed on your feet despite the economy and everything, and now you're a fixture in Cali. But tell me something, there's an accent there. I'm from the UK, but I know nothing about accents. Where's your accent from?
I'm actually from Manchester, just east of Manchester, a small town called Stalybridge.
Stalybridge Celtic.
Stalybridge Celtic, yes, the famous Bower Fold. I do try and visit whenever I go back. I am also a Manchester United fan.
So you're suffering the Falcao consequences right now, old Radamel on the bench at your club.
Yeah, well, I just think it's a bit of a bad time for him, really. I think it was a bit hard on him, really, coming straight after such a serious injury. I don't think it's going to work out. I can't see us sticking with him next year. But I'm sure he'll come back, and I'm sure he'll be a great striker again. But I think it's just been a bit too soon for him this year, really.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me a little bit sad because, you know, I've never had anything against Manchester United. I'm from the south, as you can hear. But I was happy to see Falcao go to an English club, and where better than somewhere. You know, the whole idea of him playing up front with Van Persie and Rooney in a box, you know, just in the gap behind him, was so exciting. I was like, how many goals are they going to score? It kind of reminded me of Newcastle under Kevin Keegan, and that's all I wanted. And now I feel that Manchester United is sort of, you know, leaving a sour taste in the mouth of sort of collective Colombia, you know, because of the way that Falcao is. I wouldn't say how he's been treated, because I just don't think he's completely fit, and the coach Van Gaal is no idiot.
I agree entirely. I just think it's the Premier League's such a fast league, and it's so hard to adapt. I mean, I think a lot of people forget that as well. Like with foreign stars, no matter how much money they're earning, it's the same with Di Maria this year. I mean, he might be an amazing footballer, but at the end of the day, he's moved to another country. He's got to adapt. Are his family happy? And so you've got his whole professional side of things. That's part of it. But also, you know, personally, I mean, we know having moved to another country, it's difficult. And I think people often forget that, and it just takes time to adapt. And I'm sure if Falcao stayed in Premier League for another season, he'd definitely, you know, be much better and adapt and score a lot more goals. But I just think the change has been too drastic from this season, I think.
Look at that, the international language of football there. It bridges every border. So you run all sorts of things down there in Cali. You say, like, the Expat Football League. You run a pub quiz as well. I mean, who ends up coming? Do you get Colombians coming to your pub quiz?
Yeah, it's grown. I mean, it just started out just over 2 years ago. Myself and a friend, Luke Whelan, who's now back in England. And we just thought, why should we have a pub quiz? We know we just need to test each other's knowledge. And we started it, we did one night on a Thursday, just before Christmas. We'd see how many people came. We had, I think, about 50 people the first time. Generally expats, but there were a few Colombians as well. I think the winning team was actually a Colombian team on that occasion. It is quite hard to explain the concept to Colombians, because when you say, oh, you can come to a bar, you pay a bit of money, and they're like, but you sit down and answer some questions, and you go, yeah, yeah. And they're like, how's that fun? And then you sort of explain the sort of the team nature of it, and how it's, you know, you sort of, the idea is that each person has a different knowledge area, and they can sort of get into it, but it's still quite hard to explain to a lot of caleños who would rather sort of go to a place and dance. So it's a very cultural thing, but the ones that do come really enjoy it. I mean, yeah, it's been going over 2 years now. I think we've done 9 altogether. The last one was a few weeks ago. We try and do it every 3-4 times a year. Basically, the winning team take home a pretty good pot, maybe about 50% of what we take in terms of all the money. Then we give some to second place, a raffle, and then we also make a big effort to donate to charity, generally a local orphanage where maybe one of the people that come to the quiz they help out with, or something like that. So we've raised over 2 years about £1 million for charity as well. So it's a nice event. We host it at the London Bar, which is in Santa Monica in the north of Cali. We try to do it every 3-4 months. And yeah, it's growing. We have different people that come each time. Sometimes we generally try and get about 50, 60 people. But yeah, it's fantastic. Fantastic event. I'm very proud that it's sort of got this far. And yeah, it's good fun for me to do as well. I mean, that's why I do it. It's good fun. I like to see people have a nice time.
Excellent. Now, you touched on something there. Now, what about the dancing in Cali?
Yeah, I mean, people say, I still get asked the question, how's your dancing? I always say, well, you know, a bit in Spanish, me defiendo, like, you know, I can get by. I'm all right. I'm no means going to win any awards for my salsa dancing, but I've got maybe 5 or 6 moves that I can pull off, you know, just about after a few beers. So it gets, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of salsa, but I can partake in a bit of dancing every now and again. That's how I like to sort of.
I like to hit.
Explain my love for salsa.
Now, I know there's a cricket team down there as well.
Yeah, you're right. I also play in that. There aren't that many of us at the moment, so if anyone's listening that would like to join us, feel free to get in touch. But that again, that's been going for about, this is now, it started 4 years ago. That was the first time that Bogota came down to Cali to play. And since then, we've been doing it twice a year between Cali and Bogota. They come here in November. We go there in June. That's being planned at the moment. Then also, we're trying to find a few more teams. So we know the guys in Medellin are setting up. We're pretty sure there's some guys in Santa Marta. And the holy grail will be to find a team in San Andres. Because, I mean, that'd be fantastic to go there for a weekend to play. So, Sorry, what's that?
You'd be in trouble with the islanders in San Andres. They'd bring in some people from, like, the Cayman Islands or something.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they're probably pretty good as well, yeah. So, but it's a nice community event. We play roughly every 2 weeks at the Codomo Britannico in the south of Cali. We play in a football pitch. We have problems at times getting gear and things like that. So it's all the perils of playing football, playing cricket in the tropics, you know, in a country that's not obviously known for cricket. But no, it's good fun, and you know, it goes from strength to strength. We've got some very talented ones amongst us. We've also got some that sort of turn up and are more than happy just to make up the numbers. So it's another sort of fixture in the expat calendar down here in Cali.
Oh, very good. Now, I understand. So you were working at a university?
I was, yeah. Initially, I worked at a university for a year, but now I work at a bilingual school.
Very good. And you teach English or other subjects as well?
I used to teach English, but now I teach social studies, so 6th and 7th grade, so between the ages of 12, 14, roughly, which is good fun. It's all in English. I only speak with the kids in English. They, should only speak with me in English. They do try and get away with some Spanish every now and again, but it's good fun. It's you know, every day is different. You never quite know what's going to happen in a classroom. There are, you know, being a teacher in Colombia is completely different to being a teacher in England. I mean, things like thunderstorms in the mornings and make everyone late, you know, lightning strikes, power cuts, all the things that can happen sort of in a classroom can make it hectic at times, but it's nevertheless very entertaining for the most part.
I think that's very interesting indeed. And what's your greatest challenge living there in Cali as an expat?
I find I'm pretty much adapted to the place. I find you're constantly, at times it's the adaptation and the getting used to things, and that can still, after 6 years, it still sort of gets me at times. Like, you know, when you go to the bank and you've got to explain something quite technical, and even though I've got pretty good Spanish, some things like just, I find that frustration that you feel sometimes when you just can't quite get your point across as quickly as you'd like. That I do find still grates on me sometimes. I mean, just now I have to go to the bank, make a few bank transfers, but in England that'd just be done online in like 5 minutes. Whereas here you've got to put in like the right code, just got to fill in all the right boxes, and then still it doesn't work. So it's just that sort of adapting to these sort of, Colombian nuances, I do find tiresome, but again, it's all part of the fun, I suppose.
Yeah, it comes with the territory. I hate the banking anywhere.
Yeah. Who are the bigger thieves? You know, the banks or the robbers?
This is the thing, and I try my best to do nothing in the banks. The queues are so long.
Yeah, I know. I think sometimes you go there, and especially because they're only open at, they've got quite a restricted timetable. I mean, I finished school at 2:30, you've got to really rush there, get there maybe 3:15, 3:20, and then you see about 50 people in the queue, and you're just thinking, oh God, that's the next hour and a half of my life, you know, sat in there or stood in the bank.
Now, I don't know in Cali, but are they also strict on you using your cell phone in the bank as well? Like
incredibly strict. I mean, it's obviously for good reason. I understand why, but you're stuck in the bank. You're stuck in the bank for an hour and a half. I just find it's a good lesson is take a nice book everywhere you go.
Yeah, of course, you have to have a book everywhere you go. Well, listen, we're talking to Dave Proctor, who's you're a Mancunian, you're from around that area, you're down there in Cali. I never thought I'd say it's a Manchester resident in Cali. Excellent, a Manchester United fan in Cali. So, you get on fine with everyone down there because everyone immediately knows who Manchester United is. You've been down there teaching for 6 years. What a story that you set up all these things, the pub quiz, you play on the cricket team and so on. But we're going to take a short break. And when we come back in the next section of this show, we're going to talk about an even bigger project that you have, which I was looking at it now online on the website. It's just amazing. So I'm going to keep my listeners out there on tenterhooks as we wait to tune in to hear a little bit more about your life down there. If anyone wants to get in touch with me, of course, you can find us on our website, columbiacallingradio.com. We're on Facebook, of course, as Columbia Calling, and Twitter at Columbia Calling. And of course, what else have we got? We're on everything out there, all of the social media that you can possibly think of. Send us an email, columbiacalling@gmail.com as well, if you want to hear from different people. Again, we're going to take a short break. We're talking to Dave Proctor. My name is Richard McCall. This is Columbia Calling. Please don't go away. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. We're talking to Dave Proctor down in the southern industrial and economic hub of Cali. So in the southwest, the sultry southwest of Colombia, where the weather is far, far better than that in Bogota. And, you haven't made me jealous today, Dave, because I cannot hear tropical birds in the background. That's the only thing that really makes me upset. It's when I'm talking to someone in Cali that I can hear them chirping away, because, of course, in Bogota, not a bird to be seen. So.
Well, you could probably hear some traffic if you listen.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm overlooking the Septima here in Bogota. There's traffic everywhere. So, now, you've been here for 6 years, but you've got a big project. It's on the hob at the moment. You're launching it. It sounds amazing. I'm going to leave it to you because it's your baby with various others. But tell us about this project that we've been keeping our listeners in anticipation of hearing about.
Okay, yeah, so it's a pretty mammoth project. We've been working on it for about a year now. It is basically it's going to be an 8-stage mountain bike race that crosses Colombia. The idea is that it's an international mountain bike race that we have people that come from all around the world. We started work on it about this time last year, and we hope it will be the actual race will take place next August 2016. The race is going to be called the Legend of El Dorado, and we basically think we would like it to be a sort of a homage to cycling in Colombia. Colombia is a country with absolutely fantastic cycling heritage. Some amazing cyclists have come from Colombia and still do, with Quintana, Rigoberto Urán at the moment. But this is mountain biking, so it's a little bit different. We envisage the route being more or less from Zipaquirá in Cundinamarca, and the idea is the race is going to finish in Medellín. That entails crossing the Central Cordillera and the Magdalena, which means Nevada del Ruiz, which is in the middle. So there are some humongous mountains that the competitors are going to have to cross. We think it's going to be about 700 kilometers altogether. We've run the route in a car. And starting next week, we're going to be cycling the route. So in Holy Week, on Saturday morning, as a matter of fact, I'll be flying to Bogota, and then we're going to go to Zipaquirá, and we're going to be cycling the route with GPSs, GoPros, all that sort of technology, and mapping the route basically. So that's what we've started with. It is a huge logistical challenge, but we're pushing on with it, and it's very, very exciting.
It's amazing. I mean, an 8-stage mountain bike. You're not going to be going on the main roads. You'll be going on back roads, on the mud and then the puddles.
Exactly. Yeah, it's mountain biking. So most of the route might be sort of maybe on dirt tracks and stuff like that. But there will be some very technical sections. There's one bit that we've already checked out on the way down to the Magdalena, which is amazing. World-class mountain biking that people we're pretty sure would come from all over the world to experience. As well as that, I mean, we've got the absolutely stunning Colombian countryside around us. So, I mean, we'll be going through with roughly, we think, 7 different climatic zones, tropical, subtropical, up to the Paramo, up to 4,200 metres on the Nevado del Ruiz. So it's not just the cycling that's going to be extremely varied and challenging. I mean, the terrain is going to be visually stunning, and we think will take people's breath away, literally, at 4,200 metres.
Wow, what's the day with the like the biggest climb on it? I mean, because if you're going up to 4,200 metres, I assume it's that day. But what kind of vertical climb do we see on some of these days?
Roughly, so over the 8 days, there will be about 13,000 metres of climbing altogether. The biggest day we think will be that day going over Nevado del Ruiz. We're looking at about 2,000, maybe 2,500 metres of climbing that day. Which is a lot. It has to be, I mean, that's 6,000 feet, if you're thinking in imperial measures. I mean, that is, it's a lot for anyone. But as well as that, you have got the challenge of, you know, the thinning air. So it will. There aren't many events like this in the world. We've done some research. I mean, the high mountains in Colombia give us that sort of unique selling point, so to speak, being able to go up to such altitudes and see such amazing places. So, yeah, that is going to be one of the big challenges for the competitors, the altitude.
But I think you've got a unique selling point as well in that Colombia is so favourable to cyclists. You know, with the history of the cycling here, I know it's road cycling. And of course, you've got Mariana Pachon. Is that her name? Pajon?
Yeah.
Or the BMX. But just bikes in general, this is a cycling country. I mean, second only, I would say, sort of behind sort of Italy, France, and those countries. Colombia is up there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite sad in a way that more people don't cycle. I mean, you go outside the city, you see a lot of people. But I think, I mean, as you know, like the traffic in Bogota, in Cali, Medellin, all the big cities is pretty crazy. And it's not too favourable for cycling in the city. So, I mean, I cycle to work and people think I'm absolutely crazy doing it. But when you go out on the weekend, I mean, near Cali, we've got the S8, an absolutely fantastic road climb. 18 kilometres, goes up to 2,200 metres. You've got areas to the south of Cali, areas to the north. You've got a few weeks ago, we cycled up to nearly 3,000 metres in the Central Cordillera. And there's these areas that are very, very near the city, but I think just a lot of Colombians are a little bit afraid sometimes of going to these areas for the, you know, the reputation the country's had over the last 15, 20 years. I mean, I tell people where I've been at the weekend and they can't believe it. They think, why on earth are you going there? What are you risking your life and limb doing that? But I've never experienced anything bad so far, touch wood. And I think it's just a fantastic country for cycling, and it'd be great for the world to experience that.
So it's amazing. So I'm looking at the map of Colombia right now, and I'm looking at I'm charting the journey of this Legend of El Dorado route, this race, this 8-stage race, Zipaquirá, so where the Salt Cathedral is in Cundinamarca, Villa de Leyva in Boyacá, so the very famous colonial town. And then you're heading up to, is it Gacheta?
Zipaquirá. We're going to go west from there to the next place will be a town called Guaduas. Absolutely stunning whitewashed buildings all around Guaduas. Beautiful little town. Very similar to Villa de Leyva in a way, but it's nowhere near as famous. It's quite sad, but a beautiful place. From the Guaduas, we'll be over to the Magdalena, you know, the hottest place in Colombia. I mean, there's parts when we did our recce trip. I mean, we're in the hottest place in Colombia and the Magdalena Valley, 100 metres above sea level, something like that. And we could see Nevado del Tolima, you know, at 5,800 metres. I mean, there aren't many countries in the world where you can be in such a hot environment and you look up and you can see a snow-capped volcano. And we think that's pretty special and what people want to see. From there, over Nevado del Ruiz, down to Manizales, and then basically heading north through Caldas, places like Salamina, Aguaruas, Sonson, and then basically finishing in a place called El Retiro, just outside Medellin.
And what kind of accommodation will be catered for the races in this, or the participants in this?
Well, we're hoping that we'll have about 100 people taking part in the first year. We think that would be a good number for logistics reasons. The accommodation will probably be what they sort of call a racer village. So effectively, it's like porter cabins or tents that you arrange. You go to like a school field somewhere, or maybe a coliseum in a school. You just need a water supply, electricity supply, you put it up. It's like a bit rough and ready accommodation, but it's sort of it's the done thing in these sort of events generally. As well as that, there will be a few nice hotels in there to sort of, you know, get some nice rest after in the middle of the race. We're thinking a nice hotel after the Centre Nevada del Ruiz, with some thermal springs outside Manizales, which we think will be pretty nice for the competitors to rest in the thermal baths, looking up at the stars. I think that'll be quite a nice spectacle.
I think you could shout a room to the person in the yellow jersey.
Well, obviously there's awards as well. I mean, we've thought of already not the King of the Mountains. This race needs a King of the Volcano. I mean, that is, we're going over a volcano. We need to have a King of the Volcano prize. So yeah, all these little prizes are being thought of as we speak.
So why did you come up with this idea, Dave? Just to give us a bit of a background, who have you been working with to create this? Because it's a serious undertaking. This is not something for the faint of heart or anyone. You know, you can't be slack on this. Everything needs to be completely organized to a T. So give me a bit of the background.
Okay, so there's a few guys in Cali and in England. We form part of a company called the Colombian Project, which specializes in sort of specialist excursions for foreigners in Colombia, mainly around trekking, birding, those sort of holidays. Through that, a contact came with a company called Hot Chili in the UK, who specialise in road cycling, and they basically proposed to us of, you know, running a mountain bike event in Colombia. They would like to get into that field. We're sort of the Colombian experts, so to speak, even though we're not Colombian, and it's sort of started from there, really. I mean, Hot Chili, as I said, very big in road cycling. They have a big catchphrase of professional events for amateurs, where celebrities or sports stars such as James Cracknell, Matt Pryor, the Tour de France winner from 1987 from Ireland, Stephen Roach, they go on the races as well. And the people that pay to go on the race, they ride with them. So I think that's one of the joys of cycling, that even if you're, you know, a professional or an amateur, you can all, it's very social, you can all ride together. Not really like sort of football or cricket. Potentially you have your pros and your amateurs very, very much separated. Whereas in cycling, it's very, you know, you can do it together. And that's what we think is very sellable. We think people like that. And we think people, most importantly, will come to Colombia to experience that and experience the country that it is.
I think it's incredible. I think it's a very good idea, and I think with the right marketing and the right drive, you'll get it done. I think I really do. I can see a lot of people signing up for that. Now, I was curious. I mean, Red Chili. What's it called?
Hot Chili.
It's a
hot
big chili. Company.
Hot, and then Chili with two E's. Hotchili.com is their website. Yeah, they have a very big, as I said, in road cycling. They've got events. So the Cape Rule is their biggest one in South Africa. Got a London to Paris event, which is sold out before every single year. They've been going for about, I think, just over 10 years. We're also working with people such as a guy called Willy Malona, who organises a bike race in Mongolia, out in Asia, the Mongolia Bike Challenge, and also probably the biggest mountain bike race in the world, the Cape Epic in South Africa. So we are aware of, you know, of the feat that we're having to, that we're going to have to, the event that we're going to have to put on. So we are getting, as much advice and expertise from around the world as possible to help us with it.
I mean, it goes without sort of question. You are, I take it, you are an avid mountain biker.
I've started out really more of a touring cyclist, really, and I've sort of fallen into, I mean, cycling, obviously, but you have the different sort of disciplines or different fields of it. Yeah, I started out as a touring cyclist. So, I mean, I've cycled across the USA. I've done various trips in Europe. Next week we're doing our mini cycle tour, but on mountain bikes. Colombia is mainly, it's a little bit more explored for road cycling than mountain biking, but it's the unexplored nature of it that makes it so appealing to do this sort of event. But that is also sort of the flip side of the coin, the challenge of it. I mean, we're going to areas that have, you know, not many people go to, very little sort of knowledge of, apart from the people that live there. So, you know, there are issues that arise there. But in general, I mean, it's a very exciting event. It's a challenge, as I've said already, but it's something that is, if we pull it off, which we hope we will, and we know we will, we think it'll be a mainstay in the mountain bike calendar around the world.
I think you're, you know, my hat's off to you for organizing something of this scale. But I have a couple of comments to make. You know, I have this little place up in Montfort, and we get cyclists, you know, international cyclists coming through on sturdy bikes. They're not on, because to get to where I am, and you know, you have to really have a sturdy, almost a mountain bike, but sort of distant bikes with the thicker tires, you know. And these are guys coming up from Alaska, going to Ushuaia, so down the whole continent. They're doing it over 2 years, et cetera, not a gram of fat on them. And I asked them about that, because a lot of them are very solitary, you know, they travel alone, not in groups. And I asked them about these, you know, you've gone off this road. What was the map you used? And I'll find out that they've got old military maps that were, you know, sort of, they sourced, you know, on the dark web almost to find these old routes. But of course, everybody loves them in these out of the way places because, you know, they're so much more accessible.
Exactly. I think that's one of the main things about cycling, that people don't see you as a threat at all. As I always say, if you're on a bike, I mean, generally you're traveling at 10, 12, 13 miles an hour, not very fast, really. So people are a lot more open when they meet you. You see a bike loaded up with bags, and it's always, people are always curious about, oh, where have you come from, where are you going to? That's why I think it's a great and it's a unique way to travel, a lot more so than if you're doing a car or a backpack, and people sort of label you, you know, like you're much more distant, whereas cycling, people, they're always approaching, asking you questions. I mean, and that's the best part of it. I mean, people often, I've been invited into numerous houses over the years where people have offered me places to stay, offered me food, you know, fantastic hospitality. I really think you experience the best of people on these sort of cycle tours. Like you say, you go through places like Montfort where there's not many people, but the people really are very friendly at heart. And I think it's a very nice aspect of cycling that you can experience such warm hospitality and sort of the best of human nature, really.
It's true, and you just cut an interesting figure. I mean, it's very unlikely, for example, in really back places, not even Montfort, I mean, really back out of the way places, that they won't have spoken to an Australian or an English person ever before. You know, it's these possibilities, and so they'll let you camp on their land, and you, like you say, you see the good nature of the people. But I'm fascinated. I drove across the U.S. when I was 18, but I'd love to know what it's like to cycle across the U.S. How long did that take you?
It took me 10 weeks. We cycled just over 4,000 miles, started in Los Angeles, finished in New York, had to cross the Rocky Mountains. I mean, that was 5 years ago now, an absolutely wonderful experience. People always ask me what was the best part about it. I always say the American people. The amount of times that American people took us in off the road, you know, hungry, no shelter, damp, wet, whatever, they took us in, they fed us, they looked after us. Fantastic experience. When I think back to it, the food, I mean, we just ate Subway every day. It was the cheapest way to eat. We were a bit strapped for cash at the time. But fantastic experience. Saw, you know, most of the USA, you know, or not most of it, 13 states, which is quite a lot.
I mean,
a lot of people, when you go to the States, you'll just go to, you know, your standard, especially in Colombia, they'll go to Miami, New York, LA, but it's all the middle bit, you know, the middle bit. I mean, that's most of the USA. It's that was where we experienced, you know, the real warmth of the American people.
I'm so happy you mentioned this, because I would say a majority of my listeners out there and people are in the United States. So really nice to hear that. Really nice to hear that, you know, that your reception in the States was excellent. Equally, doing a road trip across the States all those years ago, I was treated very, very well indeed. And as you say, it's that middle bit. I mean, you know, going through states that people don't go to, Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, it's fascinating.
South Dakota, Minnesota, Wyoming, these are the places that when I think of the USA, that's what I think of. Those sort of places are, you know, the sort of vast, open, you know, open road in front of you. You've got the plains there, you know, you've got some cows. It's not that many mountains, but, you know, it's just, that's the image I have of the USA, just, you know, that wonderful sort of, you know, openness, you know, huge sky, all the stars at night, you know, not many people at all. And I think it's very hard to experience a place like that. And, yeah, I made the most of it. It was a wonderful, wonderful summer.
Fantastic. Let's get back to the legend of El Dorado. Just tell us about the website and how people can get in touch with you. And I do believe you're looking for investors too. So give us a little bit of background on that. So give us the details.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so our website that is currently constructed, but we have is up and running is www.legendofeldorado.com. That's Legend of El Dorado, all was one phrase. So that at the moment, it's just got our logo there and it's got our race brochure up, but gradually we'll be adding to it. There you can get in touch with us. You can find out all the necessary information. We are, as we said, we're looking for investors, sponsors, anyone that could help us really, you know, on a logistical front. And financially would be fantastic as well, obviously. But people that can help us, especially for services for the race. I don't know, transport, food here and there. We are looking for sponsors like of that nature. We've been in negotiations with a Colombian airline, but that's not quite finalised yet, so I can't say anything more about that. We are looking for sponsors. These events obviously cost a lot to put on, but that's we are looking for people to support us. You can get in touch with me as well. I've got my blog is latinodave.blogspot.com, but it's not as updated as much as I would like to. But my Twitter is, which is @Latino_Dave. So people can get in touch with me personally through that or through the race website as well.
So there's all sorts of ways of getting through it. So remember, folks, that's www.thelegendofeldorado.com or just Legend of El Dorado.
Well, it's either we've thought of this, we've registered both domains.
Very good, very good.
If you write thelegendofeldorado.com, you'll get there as well, don't worry.
Excellent.
Personally for me, Twitter @Latino_Dave, that you'll find me there as well.
It's incredible. And will there be any sort of charity work that comes out alongside of this, any sort of goodwill stuff about, you know, through projects that you might be funding through some of the income from this race or anything?
Exactly, yeah. No, we've thought of this already. We hope so. We're going to be going through event towns that are, you know, pretty small where not many foreigners go to at all. So there's going to be a lot of investment there, and we hope there's going to be a lot of community work, especially with children in these towns. You know, they might be sort of quite impoverished in places. So we are hoping to, definitely, you know, do our bit. At the end of the day, it's a Colombian race. We want it to be for the Colombian people, not just, you know, for a bunch of foreigners coming over. We do very much have that at the front of our minds. So we want it to be, as we said, a homage to Colombia, beautiful country that it is. It's cycling heritage. We want people to come here, see the best of it, and tell the rest of the world what a beautiful place it is, and then come back the next year, you know, keep being part of the race.
I think it's phenomenal. Keep me informed of its developments, and we'll keep promoting you out there. And you know, if I can, if I hear anything, and if I can write a piece about it, you know, count on me, because I think it's a fantastic idea. Colombia needs this. Colombia needs to push its boundaries of, let's say, tourism and different attractions out there for people to come and visit the country. And you're doing that. You're doing that. You're thinking outside of the box. And so, therefore, my hat is off to you. I guess Latino Dave.
You could call me that. Yeah, that'd be Dave Proctor's fine, or Latino Dave. It's just sort of it was a name that someone said once, you know, after a few drinks, and it sort of stuck, and it's sort of developed its own little reputation, I suppose.
All right. Well, listen, we've been talking to Dave Proctor. Thank you so much for your time. You can check out the website. That's www.legendofeldorado.com. Get in touch with Dave Proctor at latinodave.blogspot.com and at Twitter @Latino_Dave. You can find out all about the race. It's going to be August 2016. Am I right?
That's what we hope. We've got a sort of test event going ahead in August with a few people coming over, and we've got our trip next week where we cycle on it for the first time. So there'll be some news coming along shortly.
If you're on the roads of Semana Santa and you see some mountain bikers, don't run them over. It's Dave and his friends.
Yes, that's exactly right, yeah. Look out, Colombians are very good, I will say, to cyclists on the road. Much better than English people, also.
So. Very, very good. So anyway, again, I say thank you to Dave Proctor for his time talking and sharing with us all of his tales from Cali. Dave, it's been a real pleasure. We will promote this. We will let's get this off the ground so we can make it a success. Again, thank you for your time. I've been Richard McColl. This has been Colombia Calling. We've been talking to Dave Proctor down there in Cali. I've been in Bogota. If you've missed out or you couldn't hear anything that we mentioned or the websites, just go to our Facebook site, because everything will be up there, all about the legend of eldorado.com, and of course Latino Dave, his Dave Proctor's blog site up there. So for any news, tune into those. Once more, thank you again. This has been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McColl. I hope you enjoyed the show.